We get things underway this afternoon by welcoming to the show a landscape designer, historian, and a writer. She's the author of a number of books, including Nature and Human Intervention and The Natural World of Winnie the Pooh, and a wonderful new book, Writing Wild. We're happy to be joined by Catherine Alto. Catherine, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. It's lovely to join you from Exeter, England.
Well, the book is wonderful. It's a beautiful read and a powerful read, and covers a pretty wide swath of, I guess about, 170 years of very talented women.
It does. It does. As you mentioned, I'm a landscape historian and writer, and have always been really influenced by nature writers. They kind of inform and inspire me. And traditionally, I have known, you know, Henry David Thoreau, who did A Walk in the Woods, of course, up to Katahdin, and wrote Walden. And John Muir and lots of other men, and I thought for years the genre was dominated by them. And it turns out that a few years ago I learned that there are a lot of unsung heroes. And so I started, I wrote the book, and I hope people enjoy it.
It was, am I right that it was a feature in Outside Magazine that inspired you to let us all know there are more than just, dead white guys that have written about the natural world?
I'm glad you said that and not I. but yes. Outside Magazine had a feature article in their social media, in their online magazine. And I read it about 2 or 3 years ago. And first I noticed the date. It was published in 2003. And then I noticed that 22 of the 25 books, and the article was called 25 Books All Well-Read Travelers Should Read. And that 22 out of the 25 books were by white men. And I said, well, come on now, Outside Magazine, you can do better than this. And so I gave a slightly snarky but kind response to the social media editor, manager, and I said, I could do better. They said, well, you do better. And I wrote a response, which went on, of course, social media and this sort of thing, and it went a little bit ballistic. And it really tapped into the zeitgeist of what we're seeing now in the culture, which is we want more diversity. We want more, where are the women? Where are the women of color? Where are all women voices, female voices? And so that's where the book started. And my publisher, Timber Press, asked, are you writing a book on that? And I said, no, would you like me to? And so after 2 years, that's the book that you have.
And what was your criteria for selecting the 25 women that you feature?
Oh, that's a really good question. As I wrote the main Outside Magazine article, I eventually the book, I wanted to go really, you know, I wanted to include classic, new, and overlooked writers so that, say, I'm holding up the genre of nature writing by women, it began to strike me that I was holding up like a gemstone. And what I was trying to do as a writer is to craft kind of a really multifaceted gem that the light, lots of light would shine in. So I remember I began to feel like this jeweler, actually. I wanted to reach back farther and then include a lot of overlooked women, as well as, you know, classics like Rachel Carson and Native American writers, black writers. I founded with James Rebanks, the author of The Shepherd's Life, a writing retreat called the Rural Writing Institute. He's a shepherd in the Lake District. And he told me about Dorothy Wordsworth, who, of course, is the sister of William Wordsworth, who one of the most famous poems in the English language, Daffodils, was written by him. But it turned out that he nicked a lot of his sister's writing, and she had an open notebook, and a lot of the lake poets nicked her writing. And women, we couldn't walk alone back then because we would suffer from what's called reputational anxiety. Like, is a woman sexually promiscuous if she's walking alone? Well, actually, Dorothy Wordsworth just wanted to take a walk outside. She's a real classic romantic. We couldn't use our own names, and so So I started with Dorothy because she did a few interesting things. She climbed one of the tallest mountains in England, well, the tallest, and I climbed it to retrace her footsteps. It's called Scawfell Pike. She wrote about it, and her brother William Wordsworth nicked it. And so she was sort of someone who didn't get much credit at all, and in fact, you know, she was plagiarized. I don't know if she would mind that happened, but we can mind for her. So women didn't have access to university educations. Her brother went to Cambridge. We couldn't walk alone. And then I ended up learning a lot about Susan Fenimore Cooper, who wrote Rural Hours. So she wrote that in, it takes place in Cooperstown, New York. She's the daughter of James Fenimore Cooper, who wrote, you know, The Last of the Mohicans. And she was of an era where women still, she wrote Rural Hours in 1850. We couldn't use our own names still at that point. So she wrote it by a lady. That was the moniker that she used. Or everyone knows that anonymous was always a woman, too. So she's someone who, didn't use her name until later editions. And yet Charles Darwin read her writing, and she was really important. She's actually America's first nature writer. She wrote the first book. Many people think it's Thoreau because he's, you know, the father of American environmentalism. And I love Henry David Thoreau. We need to give Susan credit because she wrote Rural Hours 4 years before Walden it was published in 1854. And then, you know, I just sort of moved through time. And one of the most fascinating women, well, they were all fascinating to me, but Jean Stratton Porter. I wrote a piece in about her in Smithsonian, about 5,000 words. It was published in March of this year. But the article, the essay in Writing Wild is about 2,000 words. She was a trouser-wearing, gun-toting, bird-loving, moth-chasing maverick who lived from about 1863, I think, to about 1924. She was the J.K. Rowling of a century ago, and she wrote 28 books, including slightly sappy romantic novels. They all took place in a place called the Limberlost, which was a 13,000-acre swamp and wetland that was drained, and she set all her books there, most of them, and she ended up moving away from the area when it was all drained, and that it's sort of the story of the Midwest, really, because in 1850 there was a swamp act. If you could drain your swamp, you could own the land and cultivate it. So eventually cornfields and soybean fields were planted in this area. But she captured what this area looked like before it was cut down and turned into furniture in the north and replanted. And now there's an area that's been restored to look like what she wrote about in her books. She was also the very first female owner of a film production studio in Hollywood, and the first photographer, male or female, to capture birds alive instead of shooting them, posing them, and stuffing them and posing them like male photographers would do. So she's really, really fascinating. And then, you know, all the way through to Rachel Carson, you know. So what I was trying to do is, I'm sorry to give you a long answer, but it's a really multifaceted gem, and all the way up to the present, and young female nature writers as well.
We're talking with Catherine Alto about her book, Writing Wild. One of the things, and you touched on it, that's so effective and powerful in the book is that you actually visited the places where these women wrote and the places they wrote about.
I did. I'm a personal essayist, and I really respond to narratives with the presence of the author. I like a narrative authorial presence. It's kind of like nature writing about nature writing. So I climb Scawfell Pike and I wink at, you know, the men that I'm sort of running up Scawfell Pike. To we Americans, it's kind of a hill, but here, you know, everyone thinks it's a mountain. So I walked up and hiked up, but I passed a few sets of highly kitted men. And I just, for Dorothy Wordsworth, I thought I'd wink at them. And then I go canoeing in, you know, Lake Otsego in Cooperstown in New York. And I walk in the forest with a Cli-Fi rider, Climate change fiction writer named Sachi Lloyd. I walk in the ancient royal hunting forest of Epping Forest in London, and I romp through Vita Sackville West, a beautiful Sissinghurst Castle garden. So I really take people into the places to make these, you know, the women come alive, but also what inspired them. And so it's kind of an anthology, but it's an anti-anthology because I'm in it, and I'm trying to bring people into the places that so move these women.
Well, and I was so fascinated to learn about a number of the writers that I unfortunately didn't know about. One of my favorites, and I've gone out to investigate more, is Diane Ackerman. And I love her idea of kind of reimagining human vision.
Well, I don't know reimagining, but you're probably referring to her book, The Natural History of the Senses.
Mm.
And in that book, she looks at different, she kind of writes prose poetry. She's a poet, but she's really interesting because, and she lives in Ithaca, New York, which is where Cornell University is, of course. And she's a rare poet who actually had a scientist on her dissertation committee. And who was the scientist? Renowned astronomer Carl Sagan.
Right.
And Carl Sagan called her his favorite poet. That's because she combines science and poetry together in an absolutely beautiful way. And I call her Nature Writing's Aphrodite because she's quite sensual. Nature writing can be very kind of Sunday school sermon-esque proper, and it can often be not funny because who wants to cry at a funeral? I mean, if the natural world is having problems like it is, we're in the Anthropocene, we're causing it. Nobody wants to really laugh, but you know, nature writing is multidimensional, and you can be sensuous and funny and philosophical and historical. It's as diverse as human natures are. And so Diane is one of many women, yeah, that I write about.
And Mary Oliver, very sad to read that you met with her, and it wasn't long after you were with her that she passed away.
No, I didn't. I did not meet with her. I walked in Cape Cod. Yeah, that's okay. There are many women in there. But she's someone who lived for more than 50 years in Provincetown in Cape Cod. And in fact, in about an hour, I'm having a author talk in Cape Cod, a Zoom meeting. So it's nice that you mentioned her. But she's America's best-selling poet, very comforting to read. She had a very she didn't talk about it a lot. In fact, my editor asked me to rewrite that essay after she died because I wrote it before she died, and I was reticent to talk about why she wrote about the natural world really as a child, and she was sexually abused by her father. You think that children would find their own homes a refuge and a secure place. Well, the opposite was the case for her. She found safety and security in the wild, and she used to take a rucksack and pack it with Walt Whitman and other beautiful books on the natural world and poetry. And that's where she read a lot of Rumi too. So a lot of people find comfort in the poetry of Mary Oliver, and it was an honor to walk around Blackwater Pond and to get actually permissions from her estate to use three of her most famous poems. And so that was a really moving, I loved writing every single one of the essays, but that in particular, I was glad my editor said, you know what, you're hiding something. Let's let's rewrite this. And I did. And I'm really glad I did. Yeah.
The book is Writing Wild: Women Poets, Ramblers, and Mavericks Who Shape How We See the Natural World. Wonderful read from Catherine Alto. And Catherine, we thank you so much for visiting with us today.
Thank you, Rich, for having me. It's been a delight.
Catherine Alto here on Downtown.